From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Subsistence salmon fishing for Yukon River Chinook and summer chum salmon will likely remain closed through the end of the season. It's a possibility that fishery managers had warned could happen even since before the season began. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur has this report.
Expecting low returns, fishery managers said they would keep subsistence salmon fishing closed through the midpoint of the Chinook and summer chum runs. Now, both those midpoints have passed the lower river, and neither indicate there will be enough fish to meet the goals managers set for fish to escape to their spawning grounds. Dina Jalen is a state fishery manager for the Yukon River.
And so unless these runs are exceptionally, kind of abnormally, extremely late, it's unlikely that we'll get enough fish coming in the last part of the season.
That possibility is near impossible. Only about 20% of the average amount of Chinook and summer chum have returned to the lower river. It's the lowest Chinook run ever, and the second lowest summer chum run, just barely more than what returned last year. Again, manager Dina Jalen.
So we know that that's, you know, incredibly disappointing. It's really hard to see these runs come back so low. It's hard to have fishing be closed. But that's unfortunately what we have to do when the runs are this small.
It's very, very quiet at the public boat landing in town, almost eerily quiet.
Yukon River residents called into a weekly salmon teleconference on Tuesday. The calls are hosted by the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. A caller who identified herself as Ruby and Eagle said she simply couldn't provide a subsistence report since no one has been fishing. The community is facing other challenges too.
Very dry, very hot, lots of smoke. We haven't had any measurable rain for a really long time, what seems like probably a month.
Downriver, in Russian Mission, a caller who identified herself as Olga said an elder has been asking her for a taste of fish.
And then I told her that it's not us that's saying they can't fish. It's just a regulation from way up high, and then she practically was crying and say, well, tell those people not to go shop for 4 weeks in their store. They have it easy to go to the store to get what they want to eat.
In some good news, pink salmon counts are picking up in the lower river. Subsistence users can target pink and red salmon with 4-inch mesh set nets along with other gear types. Holly Carroll is a federal fishery manager for the Yukon River. She asked fishermen to move their nets if they're catching a lot of summer chum or chinook. She said it's important each makes it to their spawning grounds.
We have had years like this before, certainly for chum in 2000, 2001, and we recovered. And I have faith that we can recover again and we'll be fishing that species again, but just not this year.
She also referenced the moratorium in 2013 and 2014 prohibiting all Chinook harvest and the rebound that followed.
So while it may be hard right now, I'm just trying to put out a message for hope that if we let these fish go by now, we will be fishing on them again in 5 years' time, 4 years' time for the chum. That's my hope. Maybe even less for the chum. Maybe 2 or 3 years we could see these runs rebound.
In the meantime, salmon fishing remains closed on the Yukon River. For KYUK, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Statewide support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by Satellite Technical Services, authorized distributor for the ACR Bivvy Stick, a small two-way satellite communicator. Dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Ketchikan's federally recognized tribe is working to improve fish habitat on lands that were once clear-cut. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, Ketchikan Indian community leaders hope the pilot program near a tributary to Upper Ward Creek will serve as a model for future stream restoration efforts all over the southern panhandle.
The woods surrounding Upper Ward Creek echo with the buzz of mosquitoes, the groan of pulleys and winches, and the gurgle of water. A crew member calls a warning to keep out of the bight. That's the intersection of pulleys that hoist trees quickly through the streams. Ketchikan's tribe has been working on the land owned by Saxman's Village Corporation, Cape Fox, with the goal of making the creek a better home for local fish. It's a partnership with the Juneau-based regional nonprofit Southeast Alaska Watershed Coalition. Logging and the passage of time have changed the landscape of the creek. The harvesting reduced trees that once lined the stream banks to stumps. Stream banks are high and steep. Water levels are low. Restoration biologist John Hudson says that's hurt the population of fish that call the creek home. The area is a tributary that feeds into Ward Creek, home to several salmon species, cutthroat trout, and Dolly Varden.
That can have some pretty negative repercussions for fish habitat, because it turns out when a tree dies or it's blown over by the wind and falls into the stream, it creates amazing habitat for fish. And so, absent the old growth forest that's here right now to die and fall in the stream, the fish habitat is deteriorating. It's going downhill.
So the crew has been taking trees from farther beyond the creek and replacing the deteriorating trees in the creek. Members of the crew use a capstan wedge to help fell stronger Sitka spruce trees to replace weaker alders in the water. Hudson explains that it's a way to slow down the fast-moving water in this eroded creek bed.
What you could do in a situation like this is cut down trees, bring them in with hand-powered or gas winches, and embed them in the stream in a way that you're blocking or damming the stream up a little bit to trap sediment as it comes down.
Hudson says restoration work can provide a nice resting place for these fish by fortifying natural debris jams and crisscrossing falling logs.
It creates these incredible pools. We call them scour pools or plunge pools. And those pools are critically important for fish. It's a low-energy place to hang out. They don't have to swim against the current.
But while the work involves felling trees to be hauled into the creek, there's a balance to be struck. Tony Gallegos, the cultural director for Ketchikan Indian Community, says the work is meant to disrupt the environment as little as possible.
The whole idea is we're not getting heavy equipment in here to tear up repairing. What can we do by hand?
And it's demanding. Some of the work is done with gas-powered winches. Some is done by hand or with pulleys looped around the trunks of strong trees. It's a small local crew making it happen. Amelia Hayward of Metlakatla and Josephine Guthrie of Kluwak are two of the crew members who have been trained by KIC and SOC to help with the restoration. They recently got back from a 10-day restoration project near Margaret Creek, about 24 and a half miles from Ketchikan. They got weeks of on-the-job training back in May. Neither had done any work like this before. Guthrie says she wants to keep going, despite the fact that the Ward Creek job is almost done.
I learned a lot about persons being here, but I want to gain more on the whole sawing part of it.
Gallegos said KIC is in the process of partnering with SOC and other groups to apply for more funds to keep up the work.
We're seeing a resurgence in funding. I don't know if it's a resurgence, but funding coming where it hasn't really been there in the past. Right now, that's kind of helping to give some momentum.
Keenan Sanderson is an Indigenous food sovereignty specialist with the tribe. He says there is more to it than dropping logs into streams. It's a group effort to protect the salmon population.
Not just people out here with axes chopping trees down. You have hydrologists out here. You have fisheries biologists. You have forest, like timber experts.
And with Southeast Alaska's legacy of clear-cut logging, it's not just this creek that needs the help. Sanderson says there are plenty of places that once hosted robust fish populations.
There's definitely job security in this.
And Sanderson hopes that with some work and time, the fish will come back. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice-weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle. Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
In late June, Alaska Governor Dunleavy announced budget vetoes that equal over $763 million. That included a $5 million cut for ASME, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. ASME is a state agency with a mission to increase the economic value of Alaska seafood and to create a demand for it. Jeff Turner, spokesperson for the governor, said in an email that ASME received $7 million in federal COVID relief funds and has, quote, a substantial amount of program revenue available to carry it into the next fiscal year, close quote. That leftover amount is $3.1 million. ASME's funding went through several versions leading up to the veto. The governor had included $28.5 million for the institute in his initial budget proposal last December. The House Finance Committee cut that by $7 million. Then the Senate Finance Committee put back $5 million, which was ultimately approved by the conference committee made up of both bodies. However, the governor ended up vetoing that amount. Turner wrote, quote, after a thorough review of the agency's funding, it was determined that the $5 million wasn't needed this fiscal year for ASME to promote and advertise Alaska seafood. He goes on to say, quote, all the funds that were vetoed from the FY23 budget will be deposited in the state's rainy day fund, the Constitutional Budget Reserve account. ASME staff did not want to comment on the funding. The Alaska legislature could override the governor's vetoes, but it takes 45 votes. Since Dunleavy has been in office, there has not been enough support for overrides. Thanks for that story to Coast Alaska's Angela Denning.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.